Elsa.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
Diddy.
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon.
Hello, John David. Good afternoon to you, too.
Hello. Sorry. Hello. Hello, Frank York.
I'm sorry, David. I just can't do that. Is that Hal from Fahrenheit 9-12 39 7?
You're just making up movies.
That's
Hal from
Space Odyssey, right?
Yeah, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
2000 Leagues Under the Sea. That's right. Yeah, yep. I remember that one. That was good. That was a good one. His robot who was a kraken and a whale.
I'm sorry, man. What a disaster. Listen, how are you doing today, Bo?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited for this week's episode.
Yeah.
Because this is we're doing our father-to-father series. We kind of laid it out so we don't have to lay it out again. People know what this is about.
Yeah.
Father-to-father, you, me, chilling out. Just being dad.
That's right. Talking about being dads and talking about, you know, all the territory that goes along with that. And man, really thankful that we get the opportunity to do this. It's been cathartic for us, but we've also gotten feedback that it's been cathartic for some of y'all too.
I think that's been one of the most rewarding things about this series is all the new series for the most part, has just been really well received. People have been taking a lot from them, really enjoying them. But this one in particular has really resonated with some folks.
Yeah,
and it's
sure.
It's been good to see, because I think we really needed this one in particular to resonate with us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Close your eyes real quick. Okay. Just close your eyes real quick. Unless you're driving. Actually, don't. You know what? If you're driving, don't close your eyes. Don't do that. But for everybody else, at least try to get into this mental headspace, because our Father to Father series is really about inviting you to step into kind of this virtual kind of mental country squire with us to have a conversation. We want to kind of bring you the conversations that you have in a local pipe shop. The kind of conversations maybe sometimes you only feel like you can have a local pipe shop over a pipe. So, you know, mentally get there with us, light up your pipes, and enjoy kind of this conversation as we dive into this, this unique father to father. Hey, before we dive into it, though, I do want to give a shout out to our patrons who are helping to make this happen. So, you know, we've got the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. These are folks that are committed to making this show happen, that are patrons and doing a great job of keeping us on the air. We also say, you know, for those that can't necessarily afford or are able to contribute at the full kind of club member level, you can be a patron for as little as a dollar an episode. And man, we got to give a shout out to Alex Marshall, Charles Watson, and Garcon Fernandino. Not Dino. Listen, Fernando. Fernandian.
Great.
I think I did it right.
I don't have these names in front of me.
That's fine.
I'm not able to.
You're not able to correct me.
Shame you for getting it wrong.
No, that's all right. No, actually, I do try to leave the intentionally getting wrong as like a perk to our club members.
Yeah.
But in Fernando's case, I actually think I've actually mispronounced his name so many times that I think it's just this what it is. But anyway, we thank y'all so much for your support of the show. And hey, if you'd like to support the show for even as little as a dollar an episode, become a patron at patreon.com/countrysquireradio. All right, John David, the topic on the table today is legacy. I think I shared this on a previous Father to Father episode, but prior to the pandemic, legacy was like a major driving factor for me.
Mm.
Like a major driving factor for me on almost everything that I do. I was just thinking wanting to be remembered, wanting to my story to be out there, wanting to, the work that I do to have impact. And while that last one is still kind of true, it has far less now to do with this desire for it to be because it was my work, the work you do to have impact. I'm totally fine in most regards if I don't necessarily get credit for it.
You just want to leave something a little better.
Yeah, exactly. Leave something better.
And know at the end of the day that you did or you tried.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, right? There's a desire there that we have to create and to make better for those that come next. And, you know, as beneficiaries of those that came before us and the benefits that they were able to lay out, but then also the things they were either left undone or the things that they, messed up, we are inheritors of kind of the legacies that our parents and our parents' generation kind of gave us.
Yeah.
And now we, in all of our brokenness and all of our faults, try our best to create a legacy. Less, for me anyway, it's become less about me as it used to be and more about creating that opportunity, that legacy for the kids coming up next. And, as it relates to this series and to our children.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, when you hear the word legacy, what it comes to mind, what do you think about?
To me, I think about imparting something. It's like, I'm going to propagate something to my kids that they take on because I intentionally, purposefully left it to them so that they might be either better people or in a better position to succeed in life or something like that. And I think legacy, you can look at it a few ways. I mean, I guess my first gut instinct is to think of it as imparting almost like personality traits or work ethic or, you know, what's the legacy I leave? Well, it's not necessarily a physical thing or something, you know, tangible other than just like, you know, I left you with this skill or I left with you with this desire or this drive that or this interest that you have now that you wouldn't have had without me trying to, you know, instill some of that in you.
Or the core values as well.
Core values. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, I think that's probably the first thing that comes to my mind. And on the kind of a corollary to that, I guess, would be, you know, a legacy like leaving you, you know, maybe tangible things in order for you to have, if not an easier life, just a security in life that you wouldn't have otherwise. You know, what does an inheritance really look like? And have you really taught your kids to fish so that they can fish for themselves kind of deal, you know? And yeah, so I guess all those things kind of wrapped up together. Yeah, what about you?
You know, it's interesting that last one that you mentioned, about the teaching to fish, that's been something that I think we've been really wrestling through. Because I don't know about you, but you know, I didn't grow up uncomfortable, but compared to how I grew up, my kids, like we right now as parents are at a completely different level than my parents were when they
were our age.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like now.
And that's true. That is very true. I think we kind of talked about that maybe even on the last episode of this. I can't remember if we did or not. But, you know, when our parents came along, when they were our age, they were struggling, you know, and here we are both, you know, in our late 30s and, you know, both of us have owned and bought and sold houses and bought and sold cars and started our, you know, little nest egg or whatever. And, you know, my parents couldn't say that. I mean, it was harder for them.
I don't think I've sold a car. We drive cars until they die. Like,
well, that's good. That means you're doing some man stuff, man. Yeah, you're doing some adult stuff.
Well, or we're just not very good at keeping them up. No, but we are very frugal when it comes to cars, and we don't.
This is great.
Yeah, we never flip them. We just flip them down to the ground.
Right. Send them to the trash compactor.
That's exactly right. But no, it is something that we've just been thinking of, because I mean, like, you know, we've been incredibly blessed with the opportunities that we've had. You know, I mean, the other thing too is you and I both, and I guess I don't know the kind of the Cole legacy from that standpoint, but I mean, like, you and I have both owned businesses in our life, which is, you know, for my parents, they never actually, you know, they didn't do that. And my paternal grandfather, he was an executive for Energy. The kind of the energy company in Mississippi.
Right.
But my maternal grandfather, he did have a law practice.
Okay.
Which is a little bit different. I mean, it is owning your own business, but there is also, like, when you're a lawyer, you just kind of...
It's hard to pass that to someone.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Well, at the same time, he actually did have a son, and then he inherited it. And then actually, when he died, he did actually... It can't be easy.
I guess it happened.
If you got lawyers, generational lawyers, it can be, but you have to have generational lawyers for sure. But I mean, like, you know, even just the way in which we were able to enter into either acquiring or starting our own businesses, like, you know, we were provided resources because of that generational support of that legacy building.
Yeah. Some people don't have.
That is exactly true.
Our parents to some degree, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. You kind of, when you have that kind of generation building up on generation, it provides you with the ability to kind of do and grow more. And so now for us right now, as we're raising our kids, our daughters, like one of the things that I'm just personally struggling with and just trying to kind of figure out is trying to kind of like combat like the sense of entitlement that can come along with that when the fish are just there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like wanting to and actively teaching them how to fish, sure. But they also see very specifically how the fish kind of also just appear. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like now teaching to fish has become a novelty. And again, it's a metaphor, but like, you know what I mean? As opposed to, you know, you have to forge this.
The rule so they know how to make it, you know? And in essence, my wife has a friend that said, you know, to her, he said, you know, my whole point as a dad is to make these kids independent of me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And there's something about that that's like true, you know? Like I want my kids to know how to mine their resources so that they can make their way, you know, and they can, you know, not depend on the fish just, you know, just washing up on the shore.
Yeah. And I guess that's not, I mean, and that's good. That's exactly right. But I guess for us, it's not as much that per se. It's not about the self-sufficiency aspect of thing. I think it's the appreciation for the hard work that's involved. Mm. Because, you know, people talked about our generation
yeah.
as being like the instant gratification.
Yeah.
You know, and like part of what brought us to the pipe yeah, is because sure. we appreciate kind of the slower process in a world that is more digital, where matter knows no longer matters to other
right.
people. We see that matter. Like there's an element where part of the reason we came to the pipe is because of that physical element, because mm-hmm. of the practice that requires slowdown. Mm-hmm. It is the removal of a lot of practicality.
Right.
And it's a practice in and of itself of finding something that's impractical
yep.
and taking pleasure in it. Right.
Yeah.
And so taking that broadly and in more, you know, it's less about the, you know, oh, hey dad, can I use the car? Like it's not that kind of like in a spoiled mentality per se. It's just more from the standpoint of they now have a lot more resources mm-hmm. because they inherited those resources. And so they, by applying that hard work, they can do even more with those resources.
Right.
But an appreciation for what came before, from good and bad, in terms of how those resources come together, so that they can apply that appropriately to advance themselves and to advance others, you know, because mm-hmm. we want to, you know, try mm-hmm. to raise these kids so that they're not just like selfish and entitled.
Well, they're
kids,
good. They're good. They're good citizens.
Exactly.
They're good neighbors. They're yeah. you know good
Americans.
Well,
doing their part for the you know.
Yeah, the American way.
Man. Yeah, the American way.
Yeah, you know, I do think though, circling back around to the self sufficiency part though, when I think of legacy, mostly what I think of is, you know, what do I teach my kids and how does that form who they are?
Mm-hmm.
And again, leaving all that up to God's grace and his provision and wisdom and the Holy Spirit. Cause I just, you know, all that's above my pay grade, although we are supposed to work for those things. I want my kids to have a good work ethic.
Yeah.
That's really important to me. And I fear because of the extreme luxury that all of us in America get to live in.
Mm-hmm.
I fear for them in that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to enable them. I want them to know how to work and to come to enjoy it and find what they're good at and see it as a part of life. And, you know, in some sense, I think it took me being, you know, kind of raised as an only child, even though I do have an older brother, you know, we never really lived together. And so it's kind of raised as an only child. I think I just got a lot of what I wanted when I wanted it. And it took me kind of a long time to figure out how I needed to work, you know,
yeah.
like just that it takes effort to get what you want, you know. School in some sense was a little easy for me because I was, you know, precocious and, you know, I studied here and there, but I didn't have to work super hard in high school. You know, I didn't have to work super hard in college, even though I did, you know, but.
Oh, you meant Mississippi State. Who has to work super hard at Mississippi State?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're just making cheese and Muscadine Ripple ice cream all the time, but I want my kids to know how to work.
Yeah.
And I fear for that. I've seen so many families get torn apart because kids aren't raised in a way that they develop a work ethic. And so a lot of them become adult children, you know, and I don't want my kids to be that way.
And they're kind of nurturing. And I mean, this is not intended to be like a judgmental thing, but just to kind of like you know, just to kind of contrast it. Right. Like, I think you and I probably both know people our age.
Yeah.
Who are children of people who inherited wealth, like
yeah. Oh, yeah.
large amounts of wealth. And so their parents were, you know, basically investors of the wealth their father's generation,
sure.
You know, made. And now the children come in. And so like, you know, especially with me, I went to school with some of these people too. And like, it was,
man, you know, what are they going to do? You know,
well, what they're going to do is they're going to continue that. They're going to be taught like how to invest that money. And that's what yeah. they're going to do, is they're going to sit back and they're going to invest the money. And I'm not, you know, bashing investors. God knows I've needed investors in my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's great. But I think like there is such a disconnect I have found with a lot of those people. And it's not to say that they don't have a good work. And this is where I want to kind of like push back.
Because a lot of those people do have a good work.
Well, that's exactly my point.
They really do.
Like they do have a good work ethic, but it's very tailored to a very specific thing, which is kind of building
right.
wealth without a full appreciate. There's a... I don't want to say snob. I think entitled is probably the best word. There's just an entitled mindset that comes with that because they didn't do jack anything to get that wealth.
Right.
And now they do have to manage it, which does take effort and does take wisdom. I'm not saying that it doesn't.
Right.
But like, there's a lack of appreciation for what it took. And especially as they're analyzing like the companies that they're investing in and everything, like,
right.
like there's just a complete disconnect
yeah.
from folks who, by the way, are only going to these kids or our age,
right.
but like go to these people because they didn't, they don't have that easy access.
Right.
And so they become like this gatekeepers type thing. Anyway, all that to say, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a tangent, but my point is that like, so that's why I'm saying like, it's not for me, my concern is less about the work ethic, which is important to me. And that's something we're trying to, you know, teach our kids with. But I think it's just that when you've been given a gift,
mm-hmm.
appreciating it fully.
Yeah.
And when there's a plethora, so many gifts available to you, how taking the time and really to understand that gift, you mentioned the intellect thing. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I just recently watched Spider-Man 2.
I did not.
We're watching it with the kids. Spider-Man 2 is a fantastic movie. You never saw that one back in the day? Oh man. Like it really is a fantastic movie with the new Spider-Man movie and what they did with that. I had to go back and just do a rewatch and everything else. And you're introduced to this character of Otto Octavius who, you know, talks to Peter Parker, who's Spider-Man, about his brilliance. And he says, you know, your intellect is a privilege. It's a gift and one that you should use for all mankind. Like
yeah.
he's kind of lecturing and coming down on Peter because Peter's not showing up for school. He's kind of phoning in his work.
Or yeah.
Like, you know, we know he's Spider-Man, but he doesn't know that, right? So he's just like, he's getting onto it. Like, you are abusing this gift. You know, your ability, your mind is a beautiful thing. You didn't make that. You trained it.
Yeah.
But you're letting it go to waste.
But you've been gifted that.
Right.
So what are you going to do with it?
Exactly. And
I think it's... Are you going to phone it in? Are you going to mail it in and you know, not see it to its full potential?
Right.
And, you know... You don't want to do that.
And so like, so you and me are very different than that. Like you have a great mind. You're a genius. You're a mental person.
That's ridiculous.
To me, it feels like
that. But certainly if I do, then you do too.
Well, no. But so that's the thing, right? So the way my brain works is different. Like in terms of, I was not a good student. I was a terrible student. I had to learn to kind of get through school by kind of working the system. I got a different kind of education from that standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I dream of one day being asked to come back to my high school and giving like a keynote for address and just being blunt honest about like,
yeah,
you know, like
for like the, how crummy you were when you were there.
No, not even that. Just like just toasting the C students who got by cheating. Which,
yeah.
Which by the way, which you're about to call collaboration in life.
Right.
Like, you know, like just pointing out just the ridiculous of the education system and how it's tailored specifically for one way. Anyway, regardless, but like my children, like, you know, my daughters are still, you know, below the age of 10.
Yeah.
Their reading level is higher than mine. Like both because they're extremely smart and also because I'm dyslexic. I do not have a high reading level.
And they've been given a gift of not being that way that you didn't have.
Yeah. Right? And I was nervous about it with the kids up front, like, and you know, about kind of like learning disabilities. Because obviously I was sensitive to that. I wanted to like look for that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially my youngest, once, you know, she started reading and I think I can't remember if I shared this with you. For the longest time, she didn't want us to know that she could read. Did I tell you that?
No.
Okay. So
she didn't want you to know she could read?
Yeah. So it's a competitive thing between siblings, right?
It's interesting.
If one sibling's really good at something, then you kind of feel like you don't want to try to compete with that because you want to be, you know, whatever. And so my oldest consumes books. She's just constantly reading, right? She's nose in her book all the time. My youngest, we would try to get her to read and she wouldn't want to and would read with her. And I was worried like, oh my goodness, what if she's struggling and what if she's dyslexic and all that kind of stuff. One day, my wife found our daughter like hunched over in like the guest room with a book hiding from us so that we wouldn't know that she was reading. And it's not that she was reading anything inappropriate. She was just reading. It was just a children's book.
Right.
And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. Like, and so
weird.
We found out and then we talked to the oldest and the oldest told us like, yeah, she reads all the time. She was hiding it from us that she actually enjoys reading. I don't fully still understand that.
Almost like to take the pressure off of her? Maybe.
Maybe
like,
that was it.
Like, you know, oh, well, if they know I read, then they're going to expect me to read more or something. I don't know.
But she's the strongest reader in her class now.
So interesting.
Yeah. I mean, like, and it's brilliant. But anyway, so all of this,
that's wild.
Guess one of the things I think about with these kids is just trying to get them to fully appreciate
what they have.
What they have.
Man. Yeah. And where it came from and the struggle that took it to get there and the fact that most people don't have that. you know?
Right.
A lot of people don't have that.
Therefore, it's a gift steward in that way as well. Yeah. In a way that I think that there's just a part of me that fears raising kids like the kids I grew up with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And trying to navigate that is tough. I'm not trying to say them over there is the problem or anything. That's not my point.
That's the hard thing I think for me is because a lot of times whenever I start to think about, I don't want to raise my kids like those people over there. But then a lot of times I remember growing up wishing like, I kind of wish I was those kids over there that just had all the stuff and didn't have to worry about anything. And so I wonder myself, like, is a part of that just jealousy on my part, just bitterness or envy, you know? So I want my kids to have resources that they wouldn't otherwise have because I work hard and instill things in them. But at the same time, I want them to, like you say, appreciate where it comes from and work hard for it and know what that kind of gift means and what is expected to those that much is given, much is expected, you know? And so I think that kind of stuff is good, but it's not easy. You know, it's not easy. Those are the things that keep me up at night. That sense of, you know, man, what are my kids going to look like in 20 years? You know, I've messed around, downloaded all my crud onto their, you know, puny, you know, infantile brains that are, you know, so malleable. And, you know, it's like, man, I just hope I get it right, man. I hope I get it right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some envy at play, though. That's interesting.
I'm quick to turn it back on myself, though. I do, you know, I do have a big sense of self-depreciation and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm quick to say, well, no, that's probably your problem, John David. And there is some of that. I do, you know, I'm a sinner saved by grace. But at the same time, like, so I do think that there's an envy component and all that. But, you know, at the same time, I want my kids to, you know, growing up, not just thinking that they're going to get everything that they want.
There's an envy. I mean, like, no. But I want to pause here because I think that's good. Like, I think there's definitely... I don't know. For me, there's an envy aspect in terms of I didn't want their life because there was always something weird, honestly, about their lives. Like I just felt off.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like I really, you know, always felt like all that comfortable. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like I was like, oh,
yeah,
or anything like that. It was just kind of a disconnect. You know what I mean? Like a kind of a floating mindset. So to speak. And I'm not saying that from oh man, I wish I could just float through life. Cause I didn't want that either. I wanted to create things.
Yeah.
And I think it's, if there was envy, it was more of like, oh, I want to create things and maybe you've got the resources and I don't have those resources. Right. And I'm trying to work to create something and you're not doing anything and you just have it. Mm. And so like, if envy's at play, it's in that regard.
In that sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's
even
like,
then,
man, why are you wasting all these things that you've been given?
No, not even wasting. I wouldn't even say that. But they're not talented.
This is what I would do.
But that's the thing. You know? They're not talented. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess if I had what they had, but it's like, but if they had what I had, like, you know, in terms of like a vision, talent, drive, that sort of thing.
They might
do something great.
Yeah.
But they don't have that. So maybe that's what it is. How do you, if you're providing for the next generation, and kind of as we kind of build these legacies for our kids, how do we make sure that we're still, instilling them the desire to create, that drive, that vision, as opposed to just, you know, hey, you can just, you know, do whatever you want, which is true. I mean, like, you know, there's a point to that, right? We were all told as kids, you can grow up and be whatever you want to be. That's why you're an astronaut and I'm the president of the United States.
Yeah. And, you know, you got folks that are not. And I mean, your dad's a glorified drug dealer, you know? Right. I think you just want your kids to grow up to be good humans, you know, and be good to their neighbors and have good, you know, relationships with their, God willing, their spouses and their friends and be good civic minded people. And, you know, you want all that even more. I want that even more than I want my kids to be smart. You know, I want them to be good.
Well, they're your kids, so they won't be. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know, right? They can only go so far. Right.
Right.
But
right,
you know, I want them to be good and I want them to be kind and I want them to work hard. You know, I think if I could impart them with anything, it'd be that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Be a simple kind of man is kind of what you're saying there. Like the, you know,
yeah.
Be a simple kind of man. Love and understand. I don't remember the purpose.
I want my kids to be smart. I want them to accomplish a lot. I want them to, you know, to have a, have a resume and all these things, but that's so far down on my dreams for them. My dreams for them are more in the sense of like, man, I really want them to be good parents, and I really want them to, like, you know, when they grow up and like are working in the world, like I want them to be good witnesses to like their friends and their coworkers. And, you know, like, man, if my little boy grows up and has a wife, like I really want him to know that he's supposed to treat her right, you know, and
right.
and lead his kids. And I guess it's all the stuff I kind of hope I am when I grow up.
No, I mean, I think
I certainly don't feel like any of that now.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. I think like the focus on the basics is important. You know, you got two kinds of people in the world. You've got kind of, you know, kind of the salt of the earth, you know, folks in kind of more of like that, you know, just good people, you know, just people, good people.
Yeah.
And then you've got kind of a little bit more of those driving factors, like those driving forces. And, you know, I tend to associate more with the driving force because I'm not very good at being like a very simple person. Like the basic stuff, like, you know, I don't know how to pay taxes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
like I'm
yeah.
There's an element where I'm not very good at the simple things. The reason I'm always like drawn to new media,
new concepts, you know, disrupting technology
right.
and stuff like that.
Because the
and I'm not.
Well, because like the beaten path that shows like, okay, you do the X, Y, and Z, and then, you know, and then that's how you get to, you know, here. I'm not very good at the X or the Y or the Z. Like
right.
it's just, I'm not very good at that. And on top of that, I stress out trying to figure out, okay, what's right? Like, what is the right thing I'm supposed to do?
Right.
But if you go to spaces that are still being kind of plowed, if you're going, like, if you go kind of the Wild West, there's no right way. You get to define the right way.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel more comfort in that space. My wife, by the way, exact opposite.
We were
just having a conversation about this the other day because we were talking about some of this kind of more event type stuff we're looking into. And I mean, like, brilliant minds, like just top of her field, loves being in kind of the medical and science professions because there was a very clear path and she worked that path and she got to the top, you know, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. That stuff stresses me out. That feels like a cage to me.
Yeah.
I like kind of being more in kind of the wilder spaces. And I think one of the things I'm reconciling with as my children now are at the place where their personalities are developed and developing and kind of seeing who they are. It's kind of seeing like, well, they might not want to be a radical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they might not want to be a game changer from that standpoint.
Yeah.
They see that in me and they definitely see that desire in me from that standpoint. And I don't want to put that pressure on them. I don't want to I really don't. And so like getting comfortable with that is something that I'm struggling with. I'm like what you just said, I think is beautiful. And I want to get there. And I realize I have to get there, especially for, you know, my kids that don't, they may not necessarily want to, you know, be in that kind of game changing category, you know?
Yeah. I do wonder, like, you know, when my kids get in a certain age where they start thinking about, like, you know, if they go to college, what they're going to major in and, you know, and it, what their career plans are and all this stuff. And like, what if they do come back and decide, you know, something totally impractical. And, you know, we talked, you know, recently about Monet and, you know, his parents.
He
was like, I want to go be an artist. And dad's like, no, that's foolish. You're not going to go be an artist. And, you know, you're going to go to the military.
Go to the military.
Whatever, you know, and it's like, right. Well, like what, you know, what if my kids come back and I mean, I'm kind of an artist. I mean, I'm a small business owner.
Father, I want to be an artist. Also, we're British now for some reason.
I'm a tobacco artist, but I mean, you know,
you're an artist. I consider you an artist.
So they have that. And it's like, well, you know, what if your kids do want to do that?
Yeah.
How do you support them in that while also encouraging them to, you know, use their resources wisely and realize that they got to make it on their own and, you know, and make their own way and work hard. And I don't know. I have anxiety about the future for my kids. I really do. In the modern world, you know, I certainly do.
Well, some of that you got to release, man. It's like there's just
well, you can't
too
control
much
it.
Out of your control.
You can't control it, you know. But you're still a parent, you know, and you still know your own limitations and that you can only do so much for them.
I think like early on, that was something that I struggled with was kind of the, you know, I mean, we even shared about like coming home and I shared the story about like the car was like.
Right.
And then, you know, it's a metaphor for larger things, right? Like, it's like, there's just this, everything's about to explode, you know, and especially like, gosh, what we've lived through in our life, you know, there's just so much in the world that we have so little control over.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of getting back to what you said, you just kind of have to like, hey, you know, kind of like teach them how to work hard. And you know, again, I think imparting those core values is important. But then also, you know, recognizing that they are who they're going to be as well.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're not exactly who maybe we wanted them to be, loving them and maybe trying to do a better job of making sure they know that, hey, you know, this is home. You know, we may not always agree,
but when you come here,
but we will always love each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
And trying to establish that early on, you know.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
I do wonder, you know, part when you talk about legacy and earlier you mentioned, you know, business and we even joked about generational lawyers and stuff. But, you know, I do. There is part of me that hopes one of my kids wants to be a tobacconist, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there really is. Like, there's a part of me that's like, man, I hope that one of my kids grows up and, you know, they get the bug about blending pipe tobacco behind the counter and they realize that there's value in it and that it's exciting working with customers and retail can be a lot of fun and very rewarding. And, you know, because you don't really grow up thinking you're going to be a retailer, you know, it's just not one of those things you, you know, check off the box when you're a kid. I want to be a teacher or an astronaut or a police officer. Like, you know, I'm going to stand behind a counter and deal with customers all day. Like, you just don't think that, you know. I kind of do. I hope my kids, I hope, you know, at least one of them gets the bug and appreciates pipe tobacco and being in that space of, you know, romance where, you know, you're dealing with these high end briars and, you know, hand blending tobaccos. That's kind of a lost art. And because what we do is special every day. It's not something that people really get to do very often. And so I want them to know, grow up knowing how special it is, you know?
Yeah. You know, the kids have said before they want to be podcasters. I've had to explain to them, no, you don't. and explain to them, like, you know, podcasting isn't really, that's not a, you know, it's not really what daddy does. Like, like that's a medium that to do what daddy does. But like, what I want and what I love to see, because I'm already starting to see it, is for my children to be storytellers. You know, like that's what I crave. Podcasting is just, it's just an avenue. It's just one medium.
Yeah.
You know, like my, you know, there's no passing on Podastery and what it is today to my kids or anything like that.
It'd be hard. I mean, I don't really see a route for that.
No, I mean, well, podcasting is like a, you know, we've experienced, we got in at a great moment. And I think that it's bubbled and it's kind of reached where it's going to reach.
Yeah.
And I think it's evolving into something different on top of that too. And
As someone that's dynamic, you have to stay on top of that.
Exactly.
Keep your finger on the pulse of that.
Well, it's really, you know, this is why, I mean, my mindset for like the last 3 years has been that, honestly, if there's a future of Podastery, it has to shift from, you know, being so podcast focused and being about story and being about I mean, you know, to put it in less romantic terms, intellectual property. Like there has to be that's really kind of the path forward as a business, if there is a path forward as a business. But no, like for me, like the kids, like, you know, I've loved to see that they are storytellers. I find, you know, my oldest will draw comic books and, like, you know, write her own stories.
That's
and
neat.
That kind of thing. Yeah. And my youngest has started doing that as well.
They're like their dad.
Yeah, man. They love telling stories and it's precious to see. So in many respects, they are our legacies. And just like we can't control how we are seen or perceived after we are gone, we can't really control them. We can teach them. We can do our best to raise them right, to impart our values and everything else, but they're going to take that. And I think as long as we do a good job of instilling those core values and demonstrating that for them, even if they do things that we may disagree with or take paths we may disagree with, if that core, that center is accurate, is aligned, then I think
that's
the best we can do.
Yeah, it's certainly the best we can do. Yeah. It's hard to give up that much power. Even though you don't have that much power, you're not giving it up. You're just acknowledging that you don't have it.
That is exactly right, man.
But it's hard to do that as a new parent.
Right.
It's hard to do that as a new parent. So,
all right.
Legacy,
man.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, we were originally going to talk about failure, but we're like, let's talk about something a little bit more uplifting.
We're going to talk about failure. Yeah. Shoot. Failure, that's just like every Tuesday for me.
All right, exactly. And hey, speaking of Tuesday, you know, every Tuesday is Cobb Tuesday.
Well, that's not a failure.
That's not a failure at all, man.
Not
from
a
our
failure.
Friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
That is right, man. The folks at Missouri Meerschaum, they are doing a promotion this time of year. If you go to their Facebook page on Tuesdays for Cobb Tuesday, they're going to have a trivia question for you to answer and respond to. They will pick a winner from all the respondents of that question, and then that person will get a gift certificate to Missouri Meerschaum, and you can spend it on some great merchandise and pipes and whatnot. And so anyway, really cool. Be sure to go check that out if you go to Missouri Meerschaum's Facebook page. Also, be sure to follow them on other social media types, and be sure to go to their website at www.corncobpipe.com.
Yeah, talk about a great company with a great legacy right there. It's our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question of the week this week coming in from Kirk, not Captain Kirk. I think I've made that joke.
Dang it.
I think I've made that joke before. But if it was Captain Kirk, then to infinity and beyond. My good friend. hey, guys, I'm a longtime listener, been pipe smoking for roughly 13 years.
That's great.
I started listening, I think, on your third or fourth episode years ago.
Wow.
That is, yeah.
That's deep.
That's OG right there. my question is there a certain temperature, where pipes should be stored? I have a large rack in my living room that is full, and I am looking at getting a couple more to store the pipes I don't smoke as often, and will have to keep it in my basement, which is unfinished and cold in the winter and muggy in the summer.
Yeah.
Just curious if anything would happen to my pipes that are stored there. Always enjoy your show, Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk, great question, man. Thank you so much for, man, gosh, if you started that early in our adventure with Country Squire Radio and are still listening, you are something.
You are the champion,
you probably need a session of group therapy or something. Anyway, so yeah, great question. I would discourage you from storing your pipes in your basement. Pipes are temperature and weather sensitive, more and humidity sensitive too. And I don't know what part of the country
he's from. But out of the Starship Enterprise.
Oh,
which is
that's right.
Going to the galaxies far, far away.
Whatever the quadrant is. Yeah. So, you know, I think that much temperature fluctuation is just not going to be good for a pipe. Really. You want your pipe to be stored at room temperature. You really do. And the swelling and shrinking of briar back and forth with humidity and temperature is just, it's just hard on a pipe. You know, it can make a pipe stems get loose. It can, pipes can burn out if they're not cared for in a proper environment. They can get mold and beetles and, you know, everything else and mildew. And so I would actually discourage you from keeping it there. That's probably going to be kind of difficult for you because, you know, it sounds like your basement is the obvious place to put that kind of thing, particularly, you know, your high end pipes that you really want to, you know, maintain the integrity of. I'd try to keep them room temperature if I were you. One of the big, man, people mess up. They'll leave their pipe in their car, particularly in the South. It gets so hot, gosh. And, you know, they'll leave it in the car. They'll leave it outside on the covered porch or something where, you know, they think, oh, it's safe from the rain. But, gosh, the humidity and the temperature fluctuation, it's just, it can be hard on that stuff. And so briar is durable. It's wonderful for smoking tobacco because it is so durable and hardy, but we still need to take care of it if we can. And that's best done at room temperature.
All right. Well, there you go. Yeah. The, Pipes and pipe tobacco and fluctuating temperatures, always a competition, especially for those of us who live in extreme situations.
Well, yeah, certainly, you know, environments that where the temperature changes, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah. All right, great question, Kirk. Hey, if you've got a pipe question for us, send it in, show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quickfire question, Joe!
Ow!
All right, man. This is a quickfire question with a twist coming from the Jedi Master himself, Pastor Joda. Here's what he says. He says, I'm thinking of a way, of the way that you have relaunched some things this year. And what about some a deep thoughts version of quickfire questions? Here's his question. What advice would you give yourself at 23? So if we could go back in time to our 23-year-old self and give us some advice, what would it be? Now, I'm going to reinforce something that Pastor Joda is doing here. This is put as a quick fire question. So the idea is that we answer relatively fast, which without putting too much terrible thought into. I already see you've like zoned into the like,
yeah,
you know, place of wow.
What would I tell my 23-year-old self?
Yeah.
Man, just quit being a jerk. Like, get over yourself. Work harder. Boy, I sound like a really bad parent.
Man, 23.
Yeah, I was just kind of a piece of crap when I was 23. I don't know. I mean,
right out of college.
Yeah.
Were you at the Squire right out of, no, you were at seminary.
Oh, no. I didn't go to seminary until I was closer to 30.
Oh. But what did you do right out of college?
My first job out of college, I was a student recruiter at Mississippi State. So I,
that explains so much.
It does.
About the poor quality of students from Mississippi. I'm just
right. Man, you give me a hard time. So my job was to go to all these high schools all over the Southeast and tell, you know, prospective students about our academic programs and, you know, that kind of thing. And so I did that for a year, and then I was the marketing director for a law firm, and I did some paralegal work and then some real estate work and blah, 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 blah. On and on and on before I wound up in seminary. Yeah, I don't know. Everything I can think of that I would want to tell myself sounds really mean. So maybe I should just listen more than tell.
That's so interesting.
Maybe I should just listen to the 23-year-old self and just hear what he has to say, and then gently encourage him to be a good to be a man and try to grow up.
So I was at a very different life stage. We were the same age, but I was at a very different life stage than you were at 23, because I had just gotten married.
Yeah.
At that point, I was working.
So you've been married like 15 years.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's about right.
That's amazing.
A little bit over. So we just got married. I was working for a company that I would go on to work for at least 6 to 7 more years at that point.
Yeah.
Mostly because I was paying for pharmacy school. Like, you know, we were very, you know, my wife and I, we make a plan. We kind of like, we make it happen. I mean, we pivot if something's wrong, but we also like, you know, kind of stick with it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like there were times, I guess I was listening to a podcast recently where it was like a therapy podcast. And this couple was talking about how like the wife is like the husband's just constantly depressed about everything. The wife is just like, no, just like quit your job. Like go find something that you love. And he does that. And then he hates that. She's like, no, just quit it and find something you love. And like, oh my gosh, you two shut up. Like he just needs to work and find something out, like find other like areas. Like it is okay for it. Like, cause I remember for a while, like I was really just depressed at the job that I had. But at this, and so my wife was like, look, if you need to like work at a coffee shop, we will make it work. And I'm like, no, we need money.
Right.
It's like, well, I'm paying for pharmacy school. We are not going into debt. Like, this is going to be worth it when we get out. And it was.
And it was.
But it took a lot of years of a lot of hard work to get there. Right.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of one of those things where I was like, no, like the long-term payoff is worth the rough in it right now. And so I had a really like strong, good work ethic from that standpoint.
Hmm.
I think if I could go back and tell myself something then that I wish that I had to learn over the years, it's just to be much more open with my wife and just to be really. And I mean, part of that, you know, you're early in marriage, you're still kind of figuring each other out, even if you've been dating for some time.
Figuring out
who you are, but you're also trying to figure out how to do life together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that is a natural guard that I think comes with that. But just to like to let myself know, like your wife is amazing. She is gracious and generous and open. And you just need to be open and honest with that woman. And you will have so much joy and so much pleasure and so much reward so much earlier if you do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, cause when you hold stuff back and you don't work through it and you don't talk it out, then that just builds up resentment. And then that plays itself out, which especially once, you know, future or past me's future self will get to once kids come in, then some of that just kind of comes out because you're not really talking about what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about this, that, or the other, because like the fractal points come up or the kids come up or whatever it is. But you're not just being open and honest. Like, I just really wish if I could go back and tell 23-year-old me, that would probably be it.
Yeah. That's solid. It's really, really good.
Jedi Master.
I know, man. Always bringing in the heat.
Man. Great question and appropriate for a father to father episode for sure. So thank you for that, Pastor Joda. Hey, if you've got a quick fire question for us, be sure to send it in at show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments. Listener feedback.
Listener feedback. All right, man. Listener feedback from Caleb of the Old Fashioned Finance Podcast. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah. Love the guys over there. Caleb says, hey, Bo, the most recent Father to Father episode came out on my daughter's 10th birthday. Waking up this morning and reflecting on the day that I became a father was only enhanced by hearing your memories as well. I feel like I shared a special day with you guys. Again, that is from Caleb from the Old Fashioned Finance Podcast. Awesome podcast, by the way, if you want to check that out.
Yeah.
Get your mind right with your finances and enjoy a little cocktail talk as well. next one is from John. What did John have to say?
Gentlemen, I am, in fact, one of the listeners you mentioned recently. I've been working to catch up on older episodes selectively, and only in the past few weeks have listened to the most recent episodes as well. I want to thank you for the work you're doing, as I've been enjoying it immensely. The recent Father to Father episode was outstanding. Thank you for being willing to put yourselves out there. I know that it encouraged and edified me, and I can't be the only one. As a 40-year-old father of four young boys, 7, 6, 4, and 2, I relate to much of what you discussed. Please, please keep it up. I'll try to not go over long in telling about how I got into pipe smoking, and by all means, use what you like, if any, and cut what you like. we're just going to say it all. But I bought my first pipe in Budapest, Hungary, when I was on a temporary duty as a soldier and officer in the U.S. Army Veterinary Corps. I was stationed in Vicenza, Italy, and began collecting pipes at that time in 2007. However, over time, the pipes ended up in a box in the closet and were moved to Ethiopia in 2019 as members of the Christian Veterinary Mission. The pipes stayed in storage here in the States. However, when we'd been in Ethiopia for about a month, I was invited to a theological social media group in which most of the guys smoked pipes, and I deeply regretted not bringing any pipes or tobacco with me. Then in 2020, we had to leave Ethiopia due to COVID and have been unable to return due to a subsequent civil war.
Oh, yeah.
I've taken a temporary research position at a veterinary school here in the United States and have been able to appreciate smoking a pipe again. Needless to say, if and when we're able to return to Ethiopia in the near future, God willing, I'll be taking as much pipe smoking material as my wife will allow. One final note, a couple weeks back, I was doing a much needed tobacco inventory, and I realized after Cornell and Deal and Ken Byron Ventures, I have significantly more Country Squire tobacco than any other blender.
Hey!
You guys have great stuff across the board, but Cowboy Coffee is my go-to smoke. My order of Whale Song is arriving today, and
that
I can't wait.
That lucky son. Really? No,
yep.
Okay, wow.
Yep, yep. Mm. Once again, keep up the great work. Peace. And that is from John. So, John, thank you so much, man. Thank you for, just giving us a background into your story. And gosh, we hope certainly the best for all the folks in Ethiopia and that folks would be safe over there. But, man, are glad what we're doing is a little bit of a blessing to you.
Glad you got some Whale Song, man.
Yeah.
Lucky. That's good. Yeah, that's good for you. That's good for you. That's good for you. All right. Well, good stuff. Well, father to father, man, talking some legacies, talking about the kids and honestly, let's be real. We're just talking about ourselves, just trying to kind of process.
It's helpful for me, man. Yeah. It really is going through the stage right now that we're both in. I just, as we've shared over the weekend, we've spent together here. I'm in a hard place. I mean, it's a struggle right now.
You know,
it really is. It's brutal. And it's good to have resources to lean in to. And so certainly, man, you my friend Bo and so many of our good listeners have been an encouragement to me. So
Good, man. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, it's, I think seeing that response from folks, especially when they can kind of resonate with what we're talking about.
It's, yeah.
It's just nice. It's just nice to have that touch point of like, you're not crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's like, you know, there's nothing.
Well, you are, but.
There's, like one of those, there's nothing special about the frustrating thing that you're feeling.
Yeah.
It's universal. But like, that means it's kind of shared in this to some extent.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
true.
Again, different backgrounds and different people are struggling with different things. We've got wonderful, you know, able-bodied, smart children. And, you know, again, you know, thanks to our wives' brains. Of
praise the Lord.
And, but at the same time, like, even with everything, you know, quote unquote, going right, it's still just it's a slog sometimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're doing our best to build those legacies, not for ourselves, but, you know, for others and to the glory of God.
Yeah.
All right, that's brother. Right. Hey, man, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.